gavel. Welcome to the South Orange County Beach Coalition meeting for March 18th, 2026. Will you please rise and join? Who should I ask today? I'll ask one comment. Somebody does in the back. Hey, I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, and now we'll have the roll call and then a land acknowledgement by City Funder. Chair Foley, present. Member Nathan Bunda.
Present.
Member Dean Cleary.
Present.
Member Justin Boulder.
Present.
Member Annie Hall.
Present.
And Member Don Russell.
Present.
All members present.
All right,
excellent. And then you can read that. This room is not wired, right? We are recording. Okay, so I can go ahead and you're going to repeat for us. Thank you, everyone. The roll call reflects that we have all members present and none absent. We have a few housekeeping items to announce before we begin. So the room is microphone for recording of this meeting, so please keep side conversations to a minimum as they can be picked up by the recording. And please put all cell phones to mute or vibrate for the duration of the meeting. The agenda contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as otherwise provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. Any member of the public who wishes to speak on any item on the agenda or during public comments during today's meeting may do so. Please complete a speaker slip and submit to the executive officer before reading of the agenda item or before the start of the general public comments. Speaker slips are located on the table by the entrance door. When your name is called, please begin your comments by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Speakers will be given 3 minutes to speak and I'll run the timer and announce when your time is up. Please observe the time limits so all who wish to speak may have an opportunity to do so. And thank you. So speaker slips are up here. If you didn't get a chance to grab one, I don't think we're requiring that for partners and members, but if you are not formally listed as a partner or member in the MOU, please make sure you grab a speaker slip. And if you want, just raise your hand and we can have someone bring it to you, some type room. The land acknowledgement. Council Chairman Nathan Dunn.
Orange County is the unceded traditional territory of the Hodgman and Ottawa peoples. The Hodgman share the territory with the relatives and neighbors, Ottawa to the north and south to Newport, as well as to the settlements to the east and south. These people are still here and remain as nations within international relationships. With this acknowledgement, we pay respect to and honor the original traditional stewards of what is now known as Orange County, the Hodgman and Ottawa past, present, and future.
Thank you. We'll move on to the consent calendar. All items on the consent calendar will be approved with one motion unless and voted on in one motion unless pulled for discussion and separate vote. The consent calendar. So under the consent calendar, we have the minutes of February 18th, 2026 meeting. And is this request to speak for this item?
Amanda, or just have a comment.
Okay,
thank you.
Perfect, thanks. And so we have no request to speak on this particular item. Okay. Is there a motion for minutes?
Second motion.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously.
Is that second from any?
Oh, me. Okay, next up is our discussion items. And please read agenda item number 5B.
Thank you. So we have a slight adjustment from the agenda presenting today. We do have UCI's team, and we have Gavin Smith and Tyler C. of the University of California, Irvine, under the direction of Dr. Brett Sanders for the Climate Collaboration Program at the University of California. The UCI team will be providing a summary and key takeaways from the recent UCI sediment bi-rail workshop held on February 4th. So we briefly mentioned this at the last meeting, and we're excited to hear what you have to show us here.
Thank you.
And the reason we're starting at 5B is just a typo, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering, why is it 5B?
Can I make just a few preliminary
yes.
comments?
Yes.
No, thank you all for your interest in this work. Just as a background, so this student team was convened by Orange County Water District, who's interested in, like many of you know, they have sediment building up in the Clatskop Basin, and it hampers the ability to collect water that then just goes into our drinking water system. And at the same time, there's been enormous interest across the county in finding supplies of sand that could be used on beaches. And so this project team was formed, and then we also received a grant from Supervisor Foley's office to expand the project and engage a lot of stakeholders in the area who, the basic thing is that everyone looks at rail as an obvious solution. Oh my gosh, the tracks are right there along the shoreline. Why don't we just solve our sand problem with rail, right? And every time someone tried to take a swing at that, it was like, gosh, it's just not panning out. It's challenging. It's really difficult. And so the aim of this project was to kind of just, look at all these constraints and see if there's some slot, some pathway that this could in fact work. And so this is a project that is halfway done. Okay, so the report you're going to see today is a midterm report from a student team that didn't know anything about sand, as of January 1st. Okay, so I don't want to put it all in perspective that this team has been learning really quickly, applying our engineering skills to think about a problem and acknowledgement of the different constraints. And so on that note, I'm going to let the students just take it away and share their midterm report.
Okay.
All right.
So state your name. It would be helpful. I think it would be interesting also. Just state your name and your, what year you're in and then what your focus is and then your presentation.
So my name is Tyler C. I'm currently a master of engineering student at UCI in the Civil and Environmental Engineering program. It's only a one-year program, so we're halfway, almost three-quarters of the way through. So I don't really have too much of a big background in civil engineering. I'm actually a software engineer working right now. I'm excited to kind of get my feet in this field.
I'm Gavin Smith. I'm also a master's student here at UCI and in the same program as Tyler, Civil and Environmental. My background is actually in applied physics up in Oregon. So to me, this is environmental engineering and civil engineering has kind of always been something I've been interested in. So this project has been really cool to kind of get some hands-on experience and get to see, the planning and be a part of these conferences and meetings. And it's been a great experience. So I'm excited to share our progress so far. I think we should just get into it,
yeah?
Let's go. All right, so this is our sediment feasibility assessment so far through the first quarter. The overall agenda, we're going to, just for everyone's timeline, we'll go over the project, kind of what it is, the overall plan that we've built so far, kind of our workflow as well in that. We'll look at an upstream site example, a downstream site example, and our future direction and goals. In the upstream and downstream examples will be kind of just our thought process, what we've found so far. So just kind of as overall, we have been fortunate enough to partner with OCWD to evaluate sediment removal strategies from the Prado Dam and along the Santa Ana River. And our main goal has been to provide that sediment or sand to the coastal communities that need it, and also hopefully improve the water quality in the reservoir and in Prado Dam as well. Before we continue, just the team wanted to say a quick thank you to everybody. This has just been an awesome experience. We've gone out to OCWD's site, we've got to see the river, we've got to feel the sand, which was a lot of fun. It was kind of a play, like a sandbox, taking out kindergarten play date. But it was also just a good experience for us to kind of see, you know, how much sand really enters the trap there in a year. So it's been really cool so far. All right, so as for our overall plan, this is kind of just a basic map we've drawn up containing our workflow. And our workflow is simply we want to look at loading sites where we can access rail. We want to look at excavation sites, which are going to be in orange. And then we want to look at our unloading sites, which are in green. So that's where places we think we can deposit the sediment once we excavate it. So like I said,
backfill a little bit. You could comment on the Long Beach site for that called out. This might be new to a lot of people. But in fact, you've got a Long Beach harbor site.
Yeah. So our unloading sites are kind of a big part of it is the method in which we deposit the sediment into the beaches. The Long Beach site is interesting because. It would contain a method where we could potentially shoot the sand off of boats or deposit it into the beaches down near San Clemente. So that's kind of an interesting site that we are looking into, and Siri's our downstream kind of expert, right, for this project. So she couldn't make it today, but
I guess the point is that like. One idea is obviously you get a near the coast and you put sand on the near shore or on the beach itself. But the idea behind the Long Beach site, it might be possible to put it on a barge in Long Beach and then bring a boat to points all along the coast. And that might be like a more cost effective way to get sand on beaches than doing it rail all the way to the coast.
So for our overall plan, kind of following up on what I mentioned earlier, we have over 25 sites containing excavation, loading, unloading, as potential places that we've looked at, and kind of as combinations of different methods of transportation. Some examples of that would be we could use rail, obviously, that's the goal, right? Our main goal of this project is to use rail as the primary transportation method. But you know, in between there's trucking and there's maybe conveyor belts and slurry pipes to help move the sediment as cheaply as possible without causing damage to the environment. So these are all the things that we've kind of been taking into consideration. And when we had our conference in February, all of these constraints were kind of listed to us, and that helps us make our decisions on kind of a preferred method at each location. So the big takeaway I'd say from this is in the excavation column there, we have roughly 1.5 million cubic yards of sediment available to us this year, and I would say that a majority of that is replenishable yearly. So that's kind of what we've been using for our excavation calculations, and that helps determine the size of our site, which we'll get into. So this is kind of a zoomed in map. It's a upstream site. It's near south of Colton, and this is a place that we've been recommended to by Nate Schiebel. He works with OCWD, or is a partner with them, and we've kind of been learning, like, you know, what excavation sites work, and we've been using data to find ideal locations, and this was one of them. So this is kind of a scenario diagram of kind of a workflow, I guess, diagram based on different scenarios. So scenario A could be, for example, in orange, would be you take your sediment that you excavate, you transport it to a stockpile, and then you transport it to a potential rail line, and that would be the final point in red. And then in blue, option B is maybe you want to take the sediment that you excavate and you want to take it onto a stockpile, and then instead of using a rail spur that you would build, you could potentially rent rail cars from a private company or something nearby that already has a rail spur, and that would change some of those price and like timeline factors as well. And then option C, you would excavate, and then you could take it directly to the rail line, depending on how much you excavate, obviously. So all of those things have different combinations of parameters, right? And so our workflow has been to tackle those parameters based on the kind of conditions we've been given and are looking at. So as a table comparison for each scenario, I think there's a lot going on here. I'd say the big thing to take into consideration is the trade-off and the constraints rows. For example, in Site A, if you were to take your sediment, take it to a stockpile, and then take it to a, you know, a rail line that you've built, you can control the schedule a lot more, right? Because you have control of the stockpile timeline, and you have control over the rail timeline as well. You're not relying on a different company or renting or all these different kind of variables. The only thing is you would have to potentially pay more to build that infrastructure up front. Whereas option B, you can, you know, that was the one where you would take your excavation and take your sediment to a stockpile, and then you would borrow rail cars from the nearby rail spurs. That allows you to, you could still build up a stockpile, but the problem with that is you have an unpredictable schedule of when you could send the sediment off, right? Like it could just sit there for a while, and if it sits there for a year, then you're starting to excavate again if this is a yearly project. So I would say the trade-off there is value. You could be building a stockpile and excavating way too much if you're not able to ship it off. And then option C is the highest upside for cost is if you could somehow excavate 150,000 cubic yards out of this site, for example, and you just take it directly to the rail spur that's there, you wouldn't have to build any infrastructure. Well, you wouldn't have to build as much infrastructure, but you would not have control over the scheduling. And I think that's kind of a big component if you're trying to be consistent in when you're sending the sediment to the beaches. Little note here, the relative cost for option C, so if you were to take the sediment directly to a private rail line, is you would pay more to transport it because you're renting their rail cars, but also most likely you would be sending less sediment per train, so you would be losing out on that value, right? The longer the train is, what we found, the more value you're getting, right? So if you're sending less rail cars per train and you're sending more trains, you're kind of losing out on some efficiency there. So these are kind of some other general constraints that we've talked about and gone through before. Depending on the site and what control district it is in, that changes if the project is even permittable, right? That's kind of obvious constraint that we've that will change site to site. The salmon or sucker fish, it's kind of an environmental constraint. We've talked with Fish and Wildlife, and so far, verbally, they've told us they like our sites, but we haven't confirmed anything, obviously. But that is something to think about. And then the Leasebells vireo is another species that changes the permittability of the project, but also, I think, changes the timeline, specifically for excavation. So when they're nesting in here, which is roughly February to August, I believe, it's not ideal to be excavating during that time. And then you bookend that with the storm season, which is December to February. You kind of only have like a 2-month window where you're not getting flooded and you're not bothering the species there. So it makes the excavation timeline a lot more tight, right? So all of our calculations so far have been off of an 80-day kind of window. this is a downstream site example, just kind of a rough map of Doheny Beach State Park. We've talked with different rail experts on this, professionals in the industry. They like the site. The constraints kind of are more on if it's feasible in terms of, we talked about this at the meeting where there's the parking lot there, there's the beach there, can we extend towards the beach? So there's a lot of different kind of permitting constraints, I would say.
Riley's here too. We have a meeting scheduled with him in a week or two, right?
We need to make a quantifiable constraint, so.
We talked to like Jeremy Smith at Coastal Commission, he was just saying we've got like day use impacts and people can't access it while you're doing these sorts of things that come up.
Yeah, and then there's like a seasonal kind of thing where it's not ideal to do it in the summer, right? Because people want to use the beach, and there's all these different things, and the methods we choose to unload sediment onto the beach, or if we put it in the water, there's so many different constraints like that, so I think that would be good to talk about with you.
We've done it a number of times in the spring lately, and it Doheny is a pretty good place to do it. You have a lot of space, you can do multiple ways in and out, so it's a good spot for standard trainers.
Okay. And this is something that we've kind of also talked with the rail professionals, someone from our conference a month ago from Synagro. They use this technique where they kind of just forklift the rail cars off the train, which kind of makes it not as
messy.
Yeah, it's messy, yeah. Right?
So if you side dump, you get sand all over the place, but if you lift these containers off and set them down and then dump them where you want the sand, it's a cleaner way of maintaining, it's better on the track.
Yeah.
Dan is nodding his head.
So for just kind of future direction of the project, we're already at the end here. We know rail is beneficial for long distances, but our goal is to provide kind of a comparison model between a short distance situation compared to multiple transload methods. So if we're using truck and conveyor and then truck again to the rail, like, is it really worth it to actually do that for rail, right? Like, is it going to just be cheaper in the end to do truck or to use a pipeline? So those are kind of the questions we want to quantify by the end of the project. And then for unloading, we just want to be able to provide a more quantifiable analysis of the different unloading methods, which ones are going to be financially beneficial, environmentally beneficial, and if it's possible at all, right? So, and then also on that, we want to include some more like map designs. We want to actually get, you know, a site plan for each location as well. So that's kind of where we're at in the project. Thank you for the time. It's been great.
Thank you. Our next presentation from Coastal Frontiers. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
Are you guys considering, in addition to the rail transport, letting Mother Nature like stream flow move it? So like you put a certain amount of sediment just on the other side of the dam, and do the flood modeling, like so you don't over inundate the stream flow, but like let water just do what it would normally do.
Yeah, we've talked about doing that after the Prado Dam, and kind of the response that we've received, and we would have to look into it more potentially, is that it kind of resettles even though, like, further downstream, and it kind of builds up at the mouth of the river as well. So it's not, like, a flawless like method.
When we were visiting the site, we talked about that with Lisa, and they were sharing how it would be hard to get the flush to push the sand as far as we needed to go. It might create places in the system where the sand would then, instead of piling up at the dam, it would pile up later. So that's just something to think about there. Yeah, the idea, the concept you know, I think we all like the concept. It's just how do you make it happen?
Yeah. Or yeah, can you facilitate it in some other way to like push it through those bottlenecks?
Yeah.
Seems worth exploring.
Yeah.
So we love this hypothesis, and we are ready to study that. So we want to study like what is the feasibility of storms moving substantial. And we know that it depends a lot on the size of the storm.
Yeah.
So there's like a geometric relationship where like 90% of the sand is moved by like 5% of the storm events or something like that. It's just really disproportionate. But we're on it. We're gonna be looking at that. Yeah.
Any other questions? Yes.
Have you guys been in contact? I know the infrastructure is at Long Beach because I believe it's Orca sand brings it down from the Columbia River on a pretty regular basis and unloads it at Long Beach. And then it's trucked to different places.
Hmm.
And just reversing that, and so they obviously, if they can take the sand off of a barge, it seems like they have the infrastructure to put the sand on a barge. And I think the benefit of the barge, putting sand on the beach through a barge, is that you do the trucking. Even small amounts of sand are a lot of trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of wear and tear on roads and a lot of impact on residents and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the infrastructure, I think that's an interesting concept to take it all the way to Long Beach. I think the infrastructure's there to unload. It ought to be possible to reverse that and load it back onto a barge. So
it's great to have that data point because this idea was thrown out by one of the Orange County Water District planners, actually, and we didn't know if they had infrastructure in the ports for loading and unloading sand. So it sounds like you're saying we do have that.
Well, I think they do because they're currently unloading sand from Newport Beach. Mm-hmm. They're dredging sand in Newport Beach, and they're taking it to Long Beach. So they must be putting it somewhere.
Yeah.
And what is bringing it all the way to the Columbia River?
Yeah. And then,
it's the wrong color, we found out.
That's right. It's very, very dark.
Black sand beach.
Yeah. And we also know that last mile of delivery is painful in some parts. Like in San Clemente, all these small streets, like who wants trucks on the road, right? Yeah.
That's a good option.
Yeah.
But there are a couple things that kind of tag on what Andy said. When the county moved sand there at Doheny 2 summers ago, I think the total aggregate was about 60,000 yards. And if you do the math with 12-yard dump trucks, it's like 3,200 dump truck trips. Yeah. They came down Coast Highway across the railroad tracks at the entrance to Beach Road, turned up our Corporation Yard access way, and onto the beach. And it was just 2 summers in a row. And that was only 60,000 yards of sand.
Yeah.
And we're looking at 150,000. We're looking at your potential in the system right now, 1 million yards of sand. Like, how many tons is that? So the other question I had was you showed the nice aerial map of Colton, and showed the rail lines going through there. What about below Prado Dam? What's the proximity to any rail line that could be used for
at Prado?
Yeah. I drove through there Monday and I looked over, I was driving so I couldn't look very much, but I was trying to see where there's a rail line that's nearby.
So we actually have it on, if we want to go back, we have it on So we have a Prado Dam site. We picked 4 kind of loading options along like a main rail line. It's about 4 miles from like the excavation site, 4 to 6 miles, because you would have to go up and then over the bridge there. I forget.
River Road
Bridge, yeah. And you would kind of go back down into the.
Okay.
Corona time. So.
And you still have to use trucks because you have to get the trucks from the excavation site to the rail.
And I go to sand how many buildings, to get it down.
The plan at Prado is 100, what we've learned is 100,000 cubic yards till 20, or 250,000 cubic yards by 2030. That's, or a 5-year plan. And then after that, I think we haven't confirmed yet, it's like 1,200 per year. So it's not as much as the upstream sites that we've chosen. those we can do yearly at like 100 to 200,000. So it might still be worth it because it's so little to do the trucking to the rail there. Or because it's so little, it might just be worth it to just truck it all the way.
What's your timeline for completing this study?
It'll be done in the next, yeah, I was going to say by summer. Yeah, because their semester, or their quarter ends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Might have to keep working on it. Summer interns, just work on it forever.
Well, I think there's probably an agency that would allow that. when you graduate. Okay, thank you. Thank you, students. I hope you're learning something. Thank you for your insights and your assistance in helping us to find the solutions. Next up, Coastal Frontier.
Would you like to take an action on that presentation first?
Let's just receive and file. You don't have to vote on receiving and file. Right?
We tend to do it just for the sake of the easier, but we can't do it.
Yeah, I'm never going to mind again. But if you want to, can someone move to receive a motion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Okay. Coastal Frontier is item number 5C.
Okay, so our next item, we have to look forward to a presentation from Greg Heron of Coastal Frontier Corporation on the latest transect monitoring data that captured beach width change at South Frontine beaches. He's also planning to, I think, briefly touch on offshore sand force investigation at Panama Labs. Thank you, Greg, for joining us.
Great. Thank you guys for having me. First of all, great presentation on an important topic. My name is Greg Heron with Coastal Frontiers, and I guess I'm a 30th year graduate student. because I still love this stuff, and these beaches keep you humble, and you're always learning in this profession. So today I want to talk with you about the condition of the South Orange County shoreline based on some monitoring programs that we're conducting for the city of San Clemente and OC Parks. We'll start with some background information to provide context to describe the two shoreline monitoring programs. One is at Miguel Shores or Dana Strand that's being conducted for OC Parks, and then a Capistrano bike that's being conducted for the city of San Clemente. And then we'll get into the findings, starting with just the fall 25 beach condition, and then look at the long-term evolution of those beaches. And then, as Latonya noted, as we have time, we'd like to provide you an update with San Clemente's offshore sand source investigation, looking for sand that can be used to support these beach nourishments and coastal resilience projects. So here's our regional setting. The Capistrano Bight embayment there, running from Dana Point Harbor to San Mateo, and then just around the corner, Dana Strand. Dana Strand's your classic pocket. It's at the southern end of the Laguna mini cells or subcells, and it's less than a mile of shoreline. And the embayment of the Capistrano Bight to the south is about 7.5 miles. Multiple stakeholders and jurisdictions. Both shorelines are highly developed. There's limited natural sediment supply, as we just talked about, and it's been fairly infrequent beach nourishment. I'm going to do this out of order. Beach nourishment. So prior to the 1970s, there was over 2 million cubic yards of sand placed on the beaches from various projects. You see some of them listed there. And then there really wasn't much done up until recent times. Since 2000, there's been some opportunistic nourishment at North Beach on four occasions, the largest of which was 37,000 cubic yards placed by the city. 2024. The county placed about 65,000 cubic yards at Doheny and Capo Beach in 23 and 24. All of that sand came from the Santa Ana River. And then, of course, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers nourishment project at San Clemente in 2024. Looking out to the future, that Corps of Engineers project is a 50-year federal effort, so there should be more material coming about every 6 years. OCTA is currently working on a potential nourishment project that would provide about 500,000 cubic yards of material. And included in SANDAG Regional Beach Sand 3 project feasibility study was about 1.6 million cubic yards for this area.
Can I just make one correction? It's not a potential nourishment project. It is a nourishment project.
Thank you for that correction. I second that.
And I was like, what? No, we're doing it.
We're doing it. Okay. Let me go back now. So I think it's also useful to look at precipitation trends as an indication of past climate and whatnot in this area. And we're looking at cumulative residual precipitation. And I'm down at Lindbergh Field in San Diego for this, so you guys probably have a little bit more rain up this way. But when you create a cumulative residual precipitation chart, you can see these trends of wet periods and droughts. And so the wet periods are in the blue and the droughts are in the yellow. And what sticks out to me is this particularly wet period in the 1930s and 40s, followed by a dry period. And so when you look at Orange County's population, you know, you're at 200-something thousand in 1950, and then 3 million today. So when this area was, the population was really starting to take off post-war, the beaches were probably pretty healthy after a period of above average rainfall or stream flow and rainfall, a lot more material getting to the coast naturally, and then we start building on these beaches and creating our infrastructure on these beaches at that time, and then we go into this 30-year drought, and you see that going through the 1970s, and I think that had a lot of publicity at the time, and as pop culture and weather collide, that's, you know, the end of the 70s, people are draining their pools in Los Angeles and San Diego and skateboarding, and so that's a good outcome of a drought, I guess. And then you can see most recently been pretty much a 25-year drought since the 97-98 El Niño. So our shoreline monitoring programs designed to measure changes in the shore zone. We have 4 sites or transects in Dana Strand, 12 in the Capistrano Bight, San Clemente area. We're conducting fall and spring beach profile surveys, trying to capture the seasonality with the fall condition representing the post-summer condition, spring the post-winter after an energetic storm season. Data is used to evaluate and plan shoreline projects, and also understand the impact of natural events like El Nino and sea level rise on longer periods. So these are our beach profile transects, and we're effectively getting a cross-section of the beach from the back beach out to a depth of about 45 feet of water. So we're trying to capture all the sand that's moving in the system out to the depth of closure here. And some of these have some historical data on them, owing to the Corps of Engineers Coastal California Storm and Tidal Wave Study for San Diego and Orange County, dated back to the 80s and 90s. And some of these were established for the first time in 2001 by the city of San Clemente. So what's a beach profile survey? I mentioned it's, you know, we're trying to get a cross-section of the beach from the back beach out to beyond the depth of closure. It's done with a combination of 2 methods, traditional surveying techniques and a very good swimming rod net in the near shore, and then a boat with sonar working offshore, and we get overlap between the two, so we have complete coverage in that surf zone area where the profile is most dynamic. And so there's lots of ways to look at beach changes. Lots of methods out there and data that we can be used. So what we're trying to do is capture what's happening in the whole littoral zone out to the depth of closure. Other ways are using LIDAR data, which provides a great picture of the above water beach, aerial photogrammetry as well, whether it's by drone or by fixed wing aircraft. Provides a great picture of the above water beach, but we're missing what's happening below water. And then more recently, we have some of the satellite-based data, which is very useful. An individual measurement from that is not very reliable accuracy-wise, but taken over a long period, it's very useful in generating long-term trends. So the fatal flaw in our profiling method is the spatial distribution along the shoreline. And that's where, you know, we would love to have transects every 500 feet, every 100 feet, but at some point you have to balance science and budget to create a program that's sustainable that you can maintain for a long period, because that's where you're really going to kind of learn a lot, is when you monitor this over a long period of time. So let's get into the findings, starting again with the current condition and then the evolution of the shoreline. So this is starting up in the Dane Strand area. We're looking at the fall 25 beach width. That's the indicated by the blue line there on the graph. And you can see the transects on the photograph part of the graph. So it's like we're standing on the beach looking offshore. And the gray areas is showing the range of historical beach widths at those sites. So you can see where fall 25 falls relative to historical ranges. And so what we see is that at, in the middle of the study area, OC49 at the south end, DD1900, we're near or below historical minimums at those sites. And at the northern end, OC48, we're about average. So thinking about those numbers and the seasonality at that area, this is a pocket beach. So what tends to happen is in the winter, that beach rotates and pushes the sand down to the southern part. And we can see that here, these big, the big gains, the green area occurring after a winter season at the south end and losses at the north end. And then that flips in the summer season with the south swell. So the information we just showed was fall 25, if we would have showed spring 25, it might have looked a little bit different just because of the seasonality in the pocket and things like that. However, with the data that we do have, we can look at some long-term trends there at the three historical sites. At the north end at OC48 and in the center at OC49, pretty stable, less than a half a foot a year of change. But at the south end at DV1900, we've had a 73-foot net loss over this period, and we're losing almost 2 feet a year. So moving around the corner to the San Clemente's program here, again, if you look at the graph on the right, we're looking offshore, Doane State Beach on the right, Cottons on the left. Same information, the blue line is the fall 25 beach widths, and the gray shading is the range of beach widths prior to fall 25. And once again, we see from Doheny State Beach through Capistrano Shores, we're at near historical minimums, as well as Dihei Court at Mariposa Point, and at the south end of Cottons. We're about average in the north beach area, but in the T Street through San Clemente State Beach, we are above average, or well above average, near historical maximums. Now, part of this is because of the Corps of Engineers nourishment, but as you'll see in some of these other slides, these beaches have been trending upwards or growing in the past decade or so. So let's look at the outcome of that Corps of Engineers nourishment real quick. These are beach profiles or cross sections of the beach at T Street on the top and Lost Winds on the bottom. Lost Winds is up near the volleyball courts, a little bit south of T Street. And because this core project was conducted sort of in fits and starts between almost over a year, our pre-nourishment condition here is that blue line. That's October 23rd. And then you can see as the beach changes after that, as this material is being placed on it. And October 25 is about a year later. So we can see up here the effects of that core nourishment. Up here it's been held. When we look at Lost Winds, we don't see that at first until the black line, which is October 25, we can see some materials move down into that area. So let's look at time series of beach widths at those two locations. Again, T Street top, Lost Winds bottom. And we're looking at mean high water beach widths from 2001 to present. And you see we've been trending upwards over the two-decade period. And it's these last 3 points here that are showing us the impact of the nourishment at T Street. And when we look at Lost Winds, it's just this last jump as that material's moved down into that area. okay, let's take a step back and look at long-term shoreline changes and evolution in this area. So here we're looking at net beach width change over the last 24 years, 2001 to 2025. Red's indicating erosion, green is accretion. Again, we're standing on the beach looking offshore with Doheny State Beach to the right, Cottons to the left. And we see erosion over 100 feet up in the Doheny State Beach area, 130 feet or so down at Cottons. But we see these gains, net change gains, in the Pier Bowl through into Atlantic State Beach area. So we can look at that in terms of how that's evolved. And what I'm showing here is the beach area within San Clemente's jurisdiction. So that's from the Shore Club down to the San Diego County line. It's just a way to kind of take that entire area and reduce it to one number. So I'm not sure that the number of acres is important, but the trend is, and it's, as a whole, the San Clemente jurisdiction is losing about 3 acres a decade.
Okay.
0.3 a year or yes. 3 per decade. So McConnell thought it might be useful to walk through some highlights of each of these beaches, starting at Doheny State Beach and south. And so these are plots, we call them synopsis plots. They're in each of the San Clemente reports, and they're intended to kind of be a one-stop place to go and understand what happened in each of these beaches. So at the top, we have the beach profiles. The gray area is kind of the window or range of where that beach has been. From 2001 to 2007, it's San Clemente's first run at this monitoring program. And then we have a time series plot of beach widths below that, and then some statistics, you know, what's the beach width, what are the trends, and whatnot. So this is Doheny State Beach at the far north. And we can see there's these high spots here after the 82-83 El Nino, after the 97-98 El Nino, after the big rains we had in 2005. I think if we had a pre-El Nino data point, it would have been down here. A pre-83 data point would have been down there. So, you know, this is what you're going to see. I think this is just material being flushed from San Juan Creek. But taken together over this long period, we're losing about 4 feet per year. And when you look at the profile, the gray area where it's been historically, and now where we are now, we're historical now. And so this is kind of an example of that sediment that made it to the coast when that's like big rainfall in 2005. And again, I think as Brett mentioned, it's not how much rain you get, it's how quickly you get it, and which storms are going to produce that flushing type of thing. Because we have had some pretty good rains the last couple years, but we haven't seen anything like this as far as sediment making it to the beach. Moving down the way to south to Doheny State Beach, you can see we've lost about 114 feet there in the last 24 years, losing about 4 feet per year. Again, look at where the profiles are now compared to even in the 80s. And as we move down to what we call shore cliffs, so here we're south of the Shore Club, just north of the manufactured homes here. And it's a slightly negative trend, 1.6 feet per year, but fairly stable compared to what we call up the coast. Capistrano manufactured home park, it's right at the revetment. Look at the beach widths that are all, you know, less than 50 feet. It just has no place to go. Pretty small seasonal signal, and it says it's losing a half a foot per year, but there's nowhere to go from there. North beaches are wider because it cuts back, of course, from the armored shoreline where the manufactured homes are. But the trend is pretty modest over the last 25 years or so, less than a foot a year lost. DeHa Court, again, constrained by the revetment there, very narrow beaches. Not really any place to go, so it's fairly simple. As we start turning the corner to Linda Lane, our trend turns positive. So over the past 24 years, gaining about 1.5 feet per year. We've gained 51 feet at this location in the last 25 years. And if you look at the profile, you can see our recent profiles are above our gray window. T Street, similar story. We were losing material from the 80s through the early 2000s, but since that time we're gaining. And we ordered 2.5 feet per year, an increase of 82 feet here over the last 24 years. Similar story at Lost Winds, gaining about 1.5 feet per year, 1.2 feet per year over the last two decades. And then as we move to San Clemente State Beach, well, if we look at the trend over that 24-year period, it shows we're increasing about a foot per year. But if we take a look at what's happening in the last couple of years, it looks like it's either leveling out or perhaps reversing. So we'll keep an eye on that and see what's happening on those beaches in the future. And finally, at the southern end at Cottons Point, this is where we saw the most dramatic changes over the last few decades. And starting out the beach profiles, you know, look where we were in the early 2000s in this gray area and now, you know, how much we've lost here. And it was a surprise to us when we restarted this program with the city. You know, back in the early 2000s, we just drove our ATV down there and went to work, and now we can't get there. We have to bend to be in backyards in the neighborhood at Cypress Shore and shoot over the railroad track. So it's much more complicated. And then when you look at the trends, we were losing material there all along, but sometime around 2016 or 18, it just really took a nosedive. And that's where we are now, effectively in the beach area. So to summarize, beach widths in this region vary dramatically, from 0 feet to 206 feet. Historically narrow, Dana Point, Doheny through Topo Shores, DeHa, and at the south end at Cottons, about average at North Beach and Linda Lane, and we're above average currently, T Street through State Beach. The Corps of Engineers nourishment, we saw sustained gains through at least the first year of the project, and we've seen some migration to the adjacent beaches. And long-term wise, kind of following with the current condition above, big losses Doheny through Mariposa Point and Cottons Point at the south end, so the north and south ends, and stability or gains in the Pier Bowl State Beach. Okay, so that brings us to where are we going to find sand if we're going to do beach nourishment and coastal resiliency projects. So the city of San Clemente is conducting an offshore sand source investigation. It's funded by a grant provided by the Coastal Commission, and OCTA also joined up with the city providing additional funds to expand the scope of the exploration program. So we'll talk a little bit about that program, what we found in phase one, and what we're planning for phase two. So the objective, of course, is find sand, good sand as close as possible to these beaches, in sufficient quantities to support multiple projects. We saw the Corps of Engineers take sand from Surfside Sunset 30 miles away. So the objective, of course, is closer means less transit time for the dredges, is more efficient and less costly to get sand on the beach. So some of our exploration parameters, we want to look at water depths between about 35 and 60 feet, so well outside the depth of closure, but also not so deep that we make dredging difficult or uneconomical. We'd like to have a sand thickness of at least 10 feet to exploit the dredge. And then of course we need to match the sand that's on the beaches. And the San Clemente beaches, the median grain size is pretty wide range. It's about 0.12 to 0.31 millimeters. And the coarser stuff tends to be at the south stage of the tree. So we did a desktop investigation. We identified these 11 sites as potential or candidates for exploration. You can see them listed from north to south here and the distance from the pier for reference. The anticipated grain size we thought we might get out of that based on existing information. And then finally, the probability of finding suitable sand at those sites ranked from high to very low. And as we can see, the closest stuff to the pier is low to very low, and it's just that San Clemente is not geologically blessed for offshore sand deposits, as Dr. Whitehall knows from her work. So we came up with a plan that was approved by staff and council and conducted a 10-day vibe report program. So there we're driving a 4-inch diameter barrel into the sea bottom sediments, pulling out a core and using that to characterize the material at that site. At four sites in South Orange County, Dana Point, San Mateo, San Onofre, and Camp Pendleton. And I know that San Onofre and Camp Pendleton are in San Diego County. And then in North Orange County, Surfside, Sunset, and Santa Ana River, so we've shown them on the map. In one slide, showing the findings from phase one, on the left-hand side of the sites deemed unsuitable, it should be eliminated from consideration, no more exploration there. And so I'm showing you the D50 and the percent finds. So in coastal engineering, finds is defined as material passing the number 200 sieve, which is 0.074 millimeters. And so that's where the percent finds comes. So 50% of that material at the data point is finds. And when we do a beach nourishment project, we typically want to find a site that has finds content less than 20%, hopefully less than 10%. So you can see that's very fine at data point in San Mateo, almost like silt. And at Camp Pendleton, the 1-4 that we were able to get there came up, and it looked like modeling clay, I mean, 90% fine. So maybe we thought we were looking for a relic river channel or stream channel from Pole Ditch or Forest Creek, but maybe we ended up finding a marsh. Promising site San Onofre, we took 14 cores there. So many because we were chasing and trying to isolate where the good sand was. There was some pretty promising sand there, ranging from 0.08 to 1.65 millimeters. What we'd really like to see on San Clemente Beach is probably somewhere between 0.3 and 0.5. But this area is very non-homogeneous, varies quite a bit, so we were chasing it a lot. And so we think that we want to move a little further shoreward to see if we can isolate where that good sand is. And then at Santa Ana River off Newport Beach, with two cores, we didn't want to finish this program without getting at least a look at that. And it was actually some pretty nice sand. But two cores isn't enough to fully characterize it and call it a potential grad site, so we would like to go back there. Surfside Sunset, that was looked at mainly at the behest of OCTA, because they need a site for their nourishment project. And Surfside Sunset has been used for 6 years as an offshore borrowing site, so it's as close to a slam dunk as we're going to get. So it looked like it was a good promising sand. That was taken to the results were taken to the Southern California Dredge Materials Management Team a couple weeks ago, seeking a suitability determination. They provided that positive suitability determination. So now it can be taken through permitting and engineering phases. And so that this site gets finer with depth. The best sand's up on the top, and it's about 0.2 millimeters in that top 5-foot layer of sediment there. So moving forward, we have to get our next state lands permit. That should be on the agenda for the next meeting. Modify our sampling and analysis plan with the DMMT. Develop an exploration plan with agreement from the city and what they would like to explore and focus their time on. Execute that program probably sometime in hopefully June, and then prepare the reports and results by the end of the year in my hand, that's the first core we pulled up at the San Onofre site. And I was like, all right, we're into something here. And then the next core came up like silk. So from that point on, we're trying to chase and isolate where the material is located. That's it, I'm on time.
All right, thank you.
Looks like your next survey of those transects is going to be in May.
That's correct.
Do you have a date specific yet?
It's going to depend on the weather, right?
I would like to, if it's allowed, to field observe the two transects in the meeting.
Okay.
While the guys are out there.
Sure.
Is that?
Absolutely. Public beach.
Should I keep in touch with you and follow that step?
Thank you. Go ahead. Have a question?
Did you say that you attribute the sand from T Street down to the Army Corps deposit?
In part.
Oh, in part. What's the other part?
It's just naturally been accreting in that area. So that means that sand's accumulating there. So why is it accumulating there, right? Is it coming from Doheny, all that erosion up at Doheny? Is it starting to reside closer to the Pier Bowl? Is it also maybe coming from Cotton's Point? We saw that big change in what was happening at Cotton's Point in 2016, 17, 18. That corresponds to when we flipped into the different cycle of Pacific Decadal Oscillation. So it's possible we're seeing the impact of a slightly different wave environment that comes with that, that can push that material.
So we don't know for sure.
Don't know for sure.
Okay.
Which is why I'm still studying it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right, well, thank you so much. We look forward to continuing to hear about this effort. And I have another sand site that I want to talk to you about. Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? No. Okay. Now, at this time, I think that's all we have in terms of our presentations. We'll go to public participation. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the Coalition on items of public interest that are within our jurisdiction but not contained on our agenda tonight? We have any speaker cards?
Yes, we have one speaker request. We have Amanda Quintanilla, and she's the only request.
Okay. Amanda, we have 3 minutes.
Okay, great, thank you so much. I just wanted to thank you for the amazing research, the hard work, the collaboration, and the community engagement. And as a 50-plus San Clemente resident, I really appreciate that, all the hard work that's here and all the major stakeholders. And one of the important things that last night San Clemente City Council made, I shared some of Dr. Brett Sanders with my little tiny, not PhD, level. So it was very, very, basic. But I just think that it's really important to get the word out about what your amazing work is doing. And I know you have a website for the South Orange County Beach Coalition, but I don't know if there's anything else, whether Susie from St. Mark Beaches is doing, putting out newsletters and letters regarding the work that is done, or the means, and I just wanted to see if there was any kind of opportunity to do that, to get that out in the media.
Thank you.
That's important.
Thank you so much. We do have our newsletter that goes out every Friday. We have our website. All the minutes are on the website. The presentations will be linked on the website, and we invite anyone to share. Okay, any other, we have no other public speakers. Now we'll move to executive officer comments.
Thank you. So I wanted to update the group here that we have the signed and executed MOU, so that will be being sent out to each of the member agencies shortly. So you should be getting probably a snail mail copy as well as an email copy. So please stay tuned for that for each of the members. And then now that the MOU is finalized, I wanted to suggest for a future meeting that maybe we look at logos or
letterhead, since we may anticipate a need for letters of support or other branding items. So just something for us to consider maybe in the future, what would we want that to look like for Beach Coalition.
Just put something together and bring it forward. That easy.
That's all I have for executive officer comments. I have a subsection here for grant and funding updates. So there are three that I wanted to highlight today. The first is Senate Bill 1's SB 1 grants are available through the Ocean Protection Council. So there's track one that's been available on kind of a rolling basis, a quarterly rolling basis, but that current track one proposals are due March 20th, so just in a couple of days, for the current quarter. And then track two, implementation projects, letters of intent for that were due on February 20th, and invitations are anticipated by the end of this week, by March 20th. So I know some agencies here have applied, including OC Park. And then second funding availability is the National Fish and Wildlife Federation, also known as NFWF. There's the National Coastal Resilience Fund Program that's currently available. So pre-proposals are due for that by March 31st. And if invited, full applications will be due June 24th. And then lastly, we have the California Coastal Conservancy Grant application. This is on an ongoing rolling basis. They have are probably one of the first to roll out Proposition 4 funds through their existing programs. And so those applications are available and open on a rolling basis for shovel-ready projects.
Okay, could you share with us what we've applied for? I know we applied for something and we are applying for others.
Sure, so for the county, for OC Parks, and flip my hat real fast.
It's the same hat.
Sure. So SB1, we have applied for that. For Track 2 funding, we are a recipient of urgent Track 2 funding for planning and design, and we're also applying now for Track 2 funding for a construction phase.
For what?
For the Capistrano-Doheny nature-based shoreline adaptation project. So most of our grant applications are going toward that project.
She buried the lead. I was trying to get it.
I did bury the lead. Sorry about that. We also applied for that for NFWF, and we are planning to apply for Coastal Conservancy once we're shovel ready. So if anyone else has a shovel-ready project, just make sure you're shovel-ready for.
Yeah, so, Ms. Nova, can you also talk about, I know the reason why you brought up the letterhead is because we need a letter. So can you talk about that for the grants?
Sure. So we did have an opportunity arise just a couple weeks ago for Sandbags Regional Beach Sand Project 3. I think you mentioned it briefly in the presentation. But that includes opportunities, or there's a feasibility study that's been prepared over the past year through Sandag. It envisions up to 500,000 cubic yards of sand for Capistrano and Doheny Beach, as well as significant volumes of sand for nourishment in San Clemente. So great potential there for sand placement. So there was a request to provide a letter of support up to Mike Levin's office to lobby for funds to help support Sandbags' effort with that.
So where did the letter go out?
Yes, the letter went out.
Okay. I didn't get copied, so I don't know.
So I think the goal in this situation, ideally we'd be able to bring that to the coalition. The timing didn't work out. It was a very, very short timeline for the letters of support. Supervisor Foley, as the chair here, did prepare that letter of support to go out. But in the future, we would like to be able to bring that for action to the coalition. So that would be a great opportunity for letterhead.
Yes. The idea is that, and I'm not caught up on what happened with this letter, because I thought it was going to be different, but so it just went out under my name.
Correct. As chair of...
Okay.
Since we're a brown act follower, we have to take an action.
Right. Just like we did before. Just from here. So what I was hoping is that the letter would go out to all of you, we'd have signature lines, and that you all could sign on to this because we're stronger as a coalition. I mean, it's fine that I sent the letter on behalf of all of us, but I think ideally the goal is that we have, you know, numbers are better. So if it is it too late to send another letter?
The letter did go on the letterhead that was of the coalition and include the names and the organization.
Okay.
Here's the symbolic
got
share.
It. Okay, so we did list all the names.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, the due date was Monday before this meeting. That's why we couldn't.
Okay.
It would follow a very similar practice at the county letterhead where the chair signs your letter.
Yeah, okay. So is there any opposition by the voting members to us having a, like if they have a deadline, they have to get this out, can we ratify that at this meeting? We send it out to everybody in advance, but then ratify it, because I don't want us to miss opportunities because we're now going to only be meeting quarterly. So. So long
well, this is the question is we're ratifying a communication we haven't read yet.
No. You would have read it, and then so sometimes what we do at the county is that the if there's a deadline, they'll send us a letter and they'll say if there's no objection by any of the board members to this person, we don't reply all. We just send it to the person. Then the letter will go out, and then we'll put it on the board to ratify. That is the kind of concept I
think. Yeah, that's fine. I'm good with that.
Same.
Andy?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to miss us having an opportunity. It probably won't happen very often, but.
I'm thinking if you have a template that is shared among the board or the coalition, maybe, and then. Okay.
All right. We can work with partners too. We can work with the local office, figure out how they do it, and figure out what makes sense.
Yeah.
What we can do and can't do, and we'll figure that out.
Okay. And if there's opportunity for the individual agencies that are represented here to send something in addition, I think we should send them the template. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Member, coalition member comments, reports. I'll just go down the line.
Fine.
Anything
you want to? Oh, I have a question for McClona. I reached out to Susan Brewer recently. I wasn't aware that she had moved from the county over to Hager. So I asked her who at the county that could I pose some questions to. And it was about what's the thoughts on if there's going to be any opportunistic sand this summer to be brought down to Doheny Beach. And she said, check with McCall.
Yes, that's a good point that you bring up. So we are anticipating a smaller nourishment project of about roughly 11 to 13,000 cubic yards. We'll be sourcing from La Pierre, the quarry up Ortega Highway. So we have new staff on board now that Susan has retired and moved on from the county. So she's working full force on getting regulatory permits in place.
Okay. Yeah. But just so you know, Campbell Bay District will be fine with using the access way like you did the last couple of
years. Yes, we were planning to reach out to you very shortly. So
just get the paperwork and we're good to go.
I know we're planning to meet on other projects too, so we're going to throw it all in there.
Thank you.
Great. Excellent.
Andy, anything else? Chairman?
Just want to. The two women of the year, Anna and Susie, congratulations on that from Mr. Supervisor Foley.
Thank you. You're welcome. Great work. We had a
thank you, Katrina, for keeping sand and beaches always at the forefront.
Well, that's important. We had our Women Making a Difference awards celebration. This is our fifth year. And this year, the national theme for Women's History Month is a sustainable future. And so what better people to celebrate than McConnell Nova and Susie Whitelaw. So thank you. And 162 other women.
Yes. So many people doing
we recognize 25, but there were a record number of submissions. So really exciting. 164 women in the community nominated who are doing work in the area of sustainability. So I got to meet a lot of interesting women and I loved it.
Honored to be recognized.
It's nice to have you there with your family. Justin?
No comments, thank you.
Okay. No comments.
All right, any other comments? Nope. Okay, well, thank you to the students, thank you to DCI, thank you to everyone here. We are adjourned.